You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 30th of July 2020, and listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. And we are live today because it's Thursday, and that means we have geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from russjournal.org with us. Matt, hello to you. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, there's something about Tuesday and Thursday morning, sometimes Saturday morning, where I'm in amazingly good mood. I don't know if it's the tides or what it is, but it's Thursday, so I'm in an amazing mood.
It's because
Absolutely extraordinary.
It's because you know we're live today, and of course our listeners look forward to today because we are going to be discussing geopolitical issues, and the issues we're going to be talking about today concern Julian Assange, the journalist, basically, who is tied up in prison at the moment in Britain with... not a lot being told about what's actually going on. We're rather concerned about the condition that he is in, considering how he looked when he was pulled out from the embassy, and also how he looked the last time he was actually in court. It's very concerning. He's also in solitary confinement, which is a type of torture. And we've had some new developments there, which we're going to be discussing today. And the first quote that we have comes from Global Research. And they say, what we know to date is that restrictions and shackles on Assange's case are the order of the day. Restricted processes that do nothing to enable him to see counsel and enable a good brief to be exercised are typical. Most of all, the ceremonial circus that we have come to expect of British justice in the menacing shadow of US intimidation has become gloomily extensive. On July 27th, that circus was given yet another act, another limping performance. As before, the venue was the Westminster Magistrates Court in London. And I'm just going to stop there, Matt, because they're talking here about he's not able to see a counsel, he's not able to see a good brief. I mean, do you know what they're referring to there? Because, I mean, you know, he should be able to talk to his counsel, he should be able to get a solicitor. What are they referring to there? Do you know?
Well, this always happens with guys like him. It happened to Milosevic, it happened to all these guys from the first Trade Center bombing. These guys never get lawyers all the time. They're kept from sleeping. They're given the wrong medication. Photographs of them aren't allowed for obvious reasons. This is the typical MO of the regime, whether in London or in New York. So this is normal. This is what happens all the time. Now they usually kill these guys, like, you know, Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein, so they don't get a forum. But this guy has one, and they're making it. They're going to kill him if things don't change soon.
Well, it could end up like that, just through neglection, through the medical issues alone. Well, during the proceedings, Assange did appear via video link from Belmarsh Prison, albeit an hour late and only at the insistence of his legal team. The Guardian report on his presence reads like an account of a sporting engagement. Wearing a beige sweater and a pink shirt, Assange eventually appeared from Belmarsh Prison after an earlier attempt was aborted. Others were alarmed. Martin Silk of the Australian Associated Press noted, neither the Australian nor his guards were wearing face masks. I don't understand the reason for that, given that we have to wear them inside shops. This point was also made by Assange's partner, Stella Maurice. Belmarsh hasn't provided Julian with a face mask throughout this hashtag COVID crisis. The prison guards he interacts with don't wear them either. WikiLeaks supporter Juan Passarelli also felt that Assange was having trouble following the proceedings due to the judge and the lawyers not speaking loud enough and into the microphones. The topic of discussion during this administrative hearing was the announcement by the US Department of Justice on June 24th, namely the second superseding indictment. That document proved to be a naked exercise of political overreach, adding no further charges to the already heavy complement of 18, 17 of which centre on the US Espionage Act. The scope of interest, however, was widened, notably on the issue of hacking and conferencing. Assange is painted as a devilish recruiter and saboteur of the International Secret Order, a man of the conference circuit keen to open up clandestine governments and make various reasons for doing so. According to the charging document, Assange and others at WikiLeaks recruited and agreed with hackers to commit computer intrusions to benefit WikiLeaks. I don't see how any of this was to benefit WikiLeaks. I'm not sure they were a profit-making organization. I think the goal behind this was to expose crimes that were going on, and whether that was rightly or wrongly, because, you know, there were things that he exposed that I would take exception to. One of the things he exposed was the BNP members list, which put a lot of people in the BNP at a lot of risk. At the same time, he was also exposed all these war crimes that were going on in Iraq. But I don't think any of it was done for profit-making reasons. I don't think it was done to benefit WikiLeaks. I think he genuinely thought that he was benefiting the world with this, and so did all these left-wing newspapers that are attacking him now. They all were singing his praises when he showed the pictures of these attacks in Iraq. And I guess what they're saying here is that he couldn't hear what the judge was saying. So
let's be clear. He's wearing a beige sweater and a pink shirt in public. If that doesn't show that this man is in severe mental breakdown, nothing else will.
Good point.
But for the microphones, he's in a sealed box. And just like with the Milosevic trial, you know, they kept pulling the plug. This is a slightly more sophisticated version of that, where I'm sure they're messing with the audio. Anyone said that this is in his interest, because he knew eventually this was going to happen. He knows exactly what he was exposing. I think to benefit WikiLeaks, this is absurd. He knew this was going to happen. Everyone knew this was going to happen. It shows you that the forces that he's dealing with, they're both very diabolical and also very stupid.
Well, I don't really know how he can be charged with this, to be honest. He's Australian. He's not an American citizen. You know, what he does in Australia, talking about America, is not really any of America's business. They can take Bradley Manning to court. He was working for the American military when he leaked all these secrets. But it's not Assange. You know, what has he done that's against the law in Australia? I don't think he's done anything that is against the law in Australia. And just before I get into the next quote, Matt, I mean, this plastic box that he's in, what is the point of that? Why do they put them in this plastic box?
I guarantee you they say that it's for his own protection, that he doesn't get killed. But the point is, it's also very hot in there. It's makes him look like a criminal, because all these terrorists you're always in these boxes, like a prison cell. They can mess with the audio. And interestingly enough, I think it's hard to take pictures of him, because flash photography, and it creates a glare. And the last thing they want is pictures of this guy, because he doesn't look very good. Both his clothing choices and his condition of his face and hair. He looks like he's aged 20 years. This glass makes it tougher to get a good shot of him. And I think that's important. I don't know that for a fact, but it does seem very convenient.
Well, I guess it's the modern equivalent of a cage, isn't it? You know, this plastic see-through box that they put him in. Well, the next quote that we have is from late May this year, and it's also from Global Research. Captured during Assange's extradition hearing, which took place between February 24th and 28th, the images highlight the confinement Assange has been subjected to, as well as the physical deterioration he has experienced since he was arrested in April 2019 and jailed in a maximum security prison. On February 26th, Judge Vanessa Baritza vowed to hold anyone in contempt of court for taking photographs. However, an observer had taken several photos a day before the judge's warning. Anonymous Scandinavia, a Sweden-based group of WikiLeaks supporters, provided the photos to the Grey Zone in order to expose what they considered to be the state repression of an investigative journalist. The images show Assange confined to a glass cage, physically sequestered from his legal team, and unable to follow his own trial. Throughout the hearing, Assange protested his isolation, complaining to Judge Baritza, "I am as much a participant in these proceedings as I am at Wimbledon. I cannot communicate with my lawyers or ask them for clarifications. He told members of his legal team he was unable to hear from inside the glass cage. I'll just stop there and also point out this prison that he's in, the maximum security prison, which is, it's for terrorists basically, and they've got him in solitary confinement there, which is torture. So he's also being tortured as well as being prevented from being able to talk to his legal team. Did you see this at the time, Matt, this trial back in February? I remember it happening. What were your thoughts on it?
I don't know if he talked about it or not, but he was looking rough even then. You have Joe Biden called him a terrorist. The Republican Party wants him gone. And the same thing for Britain, except for Jeremy Corbyn. Other than that, when you have all the elites wanting him dead or prosecuted, you know he's not going to get a fair trial. I remember some grainy photographs of him that weren't supposed to be taken, glaring from the box, and he looked terrible. Even when he was taken out of the embassy, he looked awful. He can't talk to his lawyer. He can't hear much. And there's no reason for him to be in solitary confinement. That usually is for members of terrorist cells. But in this case, it's to drive him insane. And it is torture, even for a couple of days, let alone, I don't know how long it's been now, since January, February. He's not been in anything other than solitary confinement. And typical of those cells, the lights never go off. And they did that with Milosevic, too. So you have bright fluorescent lights on him 24 hours a day. And you know they're messing with his food and Medicaid, just like they did with Milosevic and a whole bunch of other guys like that. There's no physical reason. Well, maybe they're afraid he's going to make too many friends if he goes into general population. But there's absolutely no reason for this. And they are going to kill him or destroy his mind one way or another.
That reminds me of what they did with Rudolf Hess, who came over to Britain to try and make peace. And they kept him in solitary for years. And they fed him mind-controlled drugs and left him like a vegetable, basically. I think there are parallels here with the treatment that he is being given. Well, Nils Melzer, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Torture, warned that if extradited, Assange would be exposed to a real risk of serious violations of his human rights, including his freedom of expression, his right to a fair trial, and the prohibition of torture and other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. And again, I just want to stop there, Matt, because, I mean, they're saying this is him being extradited to America. So what is this about freedom of expression? I mean, surely wouldn't he be treated just like any other prisoner in America? Are all prisoners in America? Have they lost their freedom of expression and their violations of human rights? What is the difference between him being in a British prison and him being in an American prison?
I have the idea what he's referring to is his ability to testify rationally, his ability to defend himself. In his own words, not just his lawyer's words. I get the impression today that even this is from a while ago, but today I don't know how coherent he is. The other issue is I know that there are people on both sides of the spectrum in Great Britain that say if he goes to the U.S., he's going to be killed. The COVID thing kept him from leaving Britain, and the extradition hearing keeps getting pushed back. That's the other issue. But I think as far as expression, it has to do with his ability to defend himself and make statements. And now I have the feeling that I don't even know if that's possible anymore. Or he has to be, really coached before he does it.
Well, it doesn't seem like they seem to be too bothered about COVID, not giving him a mask and not giving his guards a mask. And we know that they've got problems with COVID in these prisons. I mean, they've released lots of other violent prisoners because of the risk of getting COVID in there. But there's no... no chance of him being released soon. Well, Meltzer was disturbed by the traits he observed after meeting Assange in May this year. In a report published by the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, the expert noted, in addition to physical ailments, Mr. Assange showed all the symptoms typical for prolonged exposure to psychological torture, including extreme stress, chronic anxiety, and intense psychological trauma. 117 licensed medical professionals from around the world have written to the British and Australian governments to condemn the torture of Assange, the denial of his fundamental right to appropriate healthcare, the climate of fear surrounding the provision of healthcare to him, and the violations of his right to doctor-patient confidentiality. Now, we have the National Health Service over here in Britain, and I was under the impression that if you were in prison, you would still be treated by the National Health Service, not like in America where they will deny healthcare to people that are actually in prison. So I don't understand why they're saying he's not getting appropriate healthcare. Can you elaborate on that at all, Matt?
Well, take a look at now, this is 2 months ago. This has been going on since February. Psychological torture, extreme stress, anxiety, and psychological trauma. Now, someone just explained to me the concept of complex PTSD. It's not one trauma. It's lots of traumas over a period of time. If this is happening 2 months ago, his ability to really even think straight or understand his surroundings or even function properly is probably extremely vitiated. And remember, this is 2 months ago, this is saying. Denying his right to health care is just part of this. I would be kind of surprised if he doesn't drop dead prior to trial, and then the press will then give lengthy analyses of all the reasons that it's not anyone's fault but his, because all factions of the elite want him gone. So, and doctor-patient confidentiality, that generally suggests that the doctors he is seeing is giving information to his jailers as to what's wrong with him to make it easier to kill him one day. Remember, with Milosevic, they gave him the wrong man. He had a heart condition. They gave him medication for leprosy, and it killed him. The symbolism of leprosy is unmistakable, but that's what killed him. And that's what the doctor-patient confidentiality issue is. They're saying what's wrong with him. Here's how you get to take care of him. I would be shocked if he ever makes it to trial.
Are there any other similarities with the Milosevic trial? I mean, you brought this up a couple of times. You're saying that the treatment of him is similar. Are there any other similarities that you can think of?
Well, I followed that case. I read all the transcripts and everything else. One of the things that Milosevic maintained his sharpness throughout, and he destroyed the prosecution and debate. That's why they pulled the plug. They're not making that mistake again. I hardly see anything that isn't parallel. He was a test case. Now, well, they haven't killed him yet, so they have to make it seem like he just can't, he's just an idiot or he's sick or he did it to himself. He'll commit suicide, is what the press is going to say. So I see almost everything. But to let him speak, to let him confront his accusers would be a disaster. I mean, he's done enough damage to the regime as it is. Letting him confront his accusers, and I would be completely shocked if they let him do that, or if they did, he won't be able to really function at 100%. He may just have his lawyers talk, and who knows if they've been spoken to.
So they just want to keep him in this befuddled state. I mean, he's going to be in a bad state anyway after being just locked up in a room for all those years. I mean, he's been in solitary confinement in that room in the embassy all this time before he was put in the prison. That's why he was in such a bad way when he was actually taken out. But we have a new indictment has been drawn up against Julian in June last month. And we've got a couple of bullet points from that. Bullet point 93. During 2010 and 2011, ASSANGE disseminated and published via the WikiLeaks website the documents classified up to the secret level that he had obtained from Manning, as described above, including approximately 75,000 Afghanistan war-related significant activity reports, 400,000 Iraq war-related significant activity replies, 800 Guantanamo Bay detainee assessment briefs, and 250,000 U.S. Department of State cables. And those initials I was saying is obviously Assange. It's just me reading it wrong here. So what is this that they're saying here, Matt? All these documents here, they're classified up to the secret level that he obtained. I mean, what is he doing by publishing all these secrets? Basically, it's Manning who's in the wrong here, I think, not Assange, an Australian citizen. What is it to him if he's publishing US secrets in Australia? It's Manning who gave them to him, wouldn't you say?
Well, I've read most of these at one time or another, and these are things that really don't have any strategic significance, but they do have reputational significance. These are a lot of lies that the press tells about the war, human rights violations, defeats that were never mentioned. And of course, Guantanamo, there's no doubt about it. These are all admissions from the regime that they're doing the wrong thing. Now, it's the next section here, 94, that the real meat of this new indictment is all about.
Okay, well, section 94 says the significant activity reports from the Afghanistan and Iraq wars that Assange disseminated and published included names of local Afghans and Iraqis who had provided information to US and coalition forces. The State Department cables that WikiLeaks disseminated and published included names of persons throughout the world who provided information to the US government in circumstances in which they could reasonably expect that their identities would be kept confidential. These sources included journalists, religious leaders, human rights advocates, and political dissidents who were living in repressive regimes and confided in the United States the abuses of their own government and the political conditions within their countries at great risk to their own safety. By disseminating and publishing these documents without redacting the human sources' names or other identifying information, Assange created a grave and imminent risk that the innocent people he named would suffer serious physical harm and or arbitrary detention. Now, I would suggest that, you know, they've got a good point here, because it's in the human rights. I was talking about the human rights legislation yesterday that guarantees us free speech. And part of that is, you know, it's against human rights to dox people, you know, to give out this information. If people have confided you in something in you in secret and you then give that out, you know, that's going against UN human rights. So how can he justify this? He should have redacted these names, I think, Matt.
Well, for one thing, I don't remember who they are, and if I saw it, they didn't mean anything to me. These are people that the U.S. government uses to justify the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. An indictment to a court has no right to decide whether or not a government is repressive or not. That's a purely political statement that has no role here, and it suggests that this is a political statement. These people are combatants, because the information that they gave directed American forces to targets, justified the destruction of certain targets, using vague language like journalists, religious leaders. I don't know what that means. That could be anybody. They justified the war against these countries. They were traitors as far as the Afghanistanis or Iraqis are concerned. They become combatants in that region. This is the information propaganda that the U.S. relies on to justify its war over there. For that reason, I have no problem with this. People died because of these people. They are not pointing out abuses. They are assisting the U.S. military in a colonial war where thousands of innocent people have been killed.
So these are people that really should have been taken to court. He was exposing crimes here, basically. Because you got in your notes here as well, it wouldn't be arbitrary detention in this case, since they would actually be criminals. So the people they're talking about, they're actually criminals in Iraq and Afghanistan, are they?
Yeah, they're assisting a colonial government destroy the government they live under. They're justifying the war. They're giving targets. They're explaining where people are. These are, you know, that's why they use such vague terminology. These are people justifying this war and justifying the continued killings over there. I haven't shed a tear for any of these people. I don't even know if anything's happened to them. But as far as Iraq and Afghanistan are concerned, of course they're criminals. They're aiding and abetting an invading force.
Well, let's have a look at point 96 here. On May the 2nd, 2011, United States Armed Forces raided the compound of Osama bin Laden in Abbottabad, Pakistan. During the raid, they collected a number of items of digital media, which included the following. Number one, a letter from bin Laden to another member of the terrorist organization Al-Qaeda, in which bin Laden requested that the member gather the Department of Defense material posted to WikiLeaks. Number two, a letter from that same member of Al-Qaeda to bin Laden with information from the Afghanistan war documents provided by Manning to WikiLeaks and released by WikiLeaks. And number three, Department of State information provided by Manning to WikiLeaks and released by WikiLeaks. Well, I mean, these first two points here, I mean, anybody could have accessed that stuff that WikiLeaks produced. So whether or not bin Laden was looking at it, I don't really think that's relevant. But what are the points you wanted to make about this, Matt?
Well, I followed this case for a long time. This is somewhere along the lines of the perfectly intact passport that floated down the wreckage of the trade towers. The other things that they found in this compound were books by Michael Collins Piper, Imperium, every right-wing leader you could think of, the purpose is obvious, to associate Osama with the right wing in the West. Clearly, it's not true. He's not leaving anything significant in the compound where that the U.S. can find him. I'm sure it's all over the place and making it impossible. You know what else they found in this compound? They found job applications for al-Qaeda, standardized job applications with check marks and everything, because that's how they're going to do it. But the reality is, of course, Osama bin Laden, according to the New York Times, in an article by Amir Tahan, died on July 11th, 2002. Actually, he died before then because he was dying of kidney failure by December of 2001. They didn't kill him. That was at a time where the war was very unpopular. No one ever saw this. These SEAL guys have body cameras and helmet cameras. They were turned off precisely as they come into this compound. It didn't happen. You have witnesses all over Pakistan who were right there in that block saying a helicopter went by, no shots were fired. And what the hell is Osama bin Laden living in the middle of a city in a normal house? Like down the street from a bar. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. Nothing about it. And of course, they have him on the ship, the body, and they dump him overboard. No explanation given. No reason for this. So no one's actually ever seen it. It's ridiculous. The whole thing is nonsense. You have witness after witness. Same thing for the guy head of ISIS. It's on Russian radar that nothing ever happened that day. It's all myths. Osama bin Laden died of kidney failure just after 9/11. And so for this to be an indictment, for someone to be this ignorant as to believe this is true, means that this indictment is absolute nonsense. And I'm really hoping they use some of this information to destroy it, because this Section 96 is absurd. That all this stuff is going to be laying around, or requests for WikiLeaks. How convenient is that? It's nonsense. Like, he would have that laying around in this place. So this is one of the red flags that show that this is all absolute nonsense.
Can you recall where the report was that he died of kidney failure? I mean, I can recall seeing it on various websites, but do you know what the source for that was?
Well, I mentioned it. It was in the New York Times, July 11th, 2002. And the author is Amir Tahiri, T-A-H-E-R-I. And the headline was Osama bin Laden is dead. But the actual date of death was December of 2001, he said. But then he was killed again on May of 2011. Now, I've heard other reports in English language press in Pakistan and India saying that he died roughly a bit after that. The dates are mixed up. And of course, everyone knows that he was on dialysis. And there's no mention of the dialysis machine in the inventory of stuff that they took from his compound. Not to mention the fact that they shot an unarmed man. So the whole thing is nonsensical. But I used to have a hard copy of that article. We had it at the Barnes Review in the spotlight. But I know I must have, when we went bankrupt, I think it must have gotten lost in the shuffle.
So there's credible documentary proof that bin Laden was already dead before the SEAL unit went in there. Well, we've got another point here, point 101. Assange was informed, among other things, that publication of the State Department cables would place at risk the lives of countless innocent individuals, from journalists to human rights activists and bloggers to soldiers to individuals providing information to further peace and security. So what is the important thing about that we need to take away from it, Matt?
I'm willing to believe that this was never uttered. Apparently, this is supposed to be it, but verbally. It sounds like propaganda that they're only doing, serving peace and security. Therefore, you're, like the Joker and Batman is just the archetypal villain here. And to think they're saying that they're innocent is a wild assumption. And here they go again, journalists and human rights activists. Well, the only journalist here is Assange.
You've also got a point here about how one of the documents that were taken away was the rules of engagement for the United States in Iraq 2006. And that's listed as secret. I mean, why would the rules of engagement be listed as secret? Why would that be illegal to possess, Matt?
I read the whole thing and it did bother me. He was one part of the indictment is that he released this. I read it and I'm struggling to find what in the heck is a man. It's really boilerplate. But there are a few things in there. The use of deadly force under certain circumstances, they list reasons why it can be used. And the last reason is that the person poses a general threat to security. And everything else is very specific except that one. They don't define what that is. And it gives a certain carte blanche to people. There's a few other sections like that. You know, this is very, the rules of engagement are very specific, except for these things when you can kill people. And then there's always a list. And then the last thing on the list is very general. In other words, if you read it carefully, you'll realize that these people are given carte blanche. They could always say, well, you know, he had a turban on, therefore he was a risk. It doesn't give any justification here. And I think if someone reads it carefully, they're going to realize that what Assange has been reporting is true, because you know they've been justified. This goes on all. This is just a handful of things that WikiLeaks says. There's all kinds of these stories over and over again that he's released. And the issue is that the rules of engagement may expose the justifications for this from the military's point of view, and that's why it's secret. And that's why there's nothing strategic about it. It doesn't show their strategy or weapons or anything else. It's just about general behavior that everyone knows. That, I think, is the only thing that would get them angry to have made public.
So really, this is all just about embarrassing the United States. It's not about anyone actually being at risk. And actually, in it, they are admitting that the journalists and the NGOs and they're all agents of the United States. That's why they're protected by the military. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.